8. The top of the hill.
You're at the top of the hill, overlooking Clipston village. The part you see in front represents the original village formed when the colliery opened in 1922. The original numbered avenues and Forest Road, Church Road and Mansfield Road are laid out roughly in the same footprint as the army training camp used for the First World War, which billeted up to 30,000 troops. To the right of this part are the prefab homes, built after the Second World War on the intake road area. The next area is provision for pensioners. All the expansion due to the success of the colliery. Further expansion continued, so looking left is Garibaldi School and the estate around it, including Newlands and John T. Rye's feeder schools. Again, this area created for the expanding colliery and coalfield. Clipston Colliery had at its peak 1,500 men and produced 1 million tons of coals in the year 1986. After the mine closed, the area you are standing on is the reclaimed colliery spoil heap, graded and planted.
Jim's been the leader of the Clipston Scouts for years, and they have their hut near the entrance to the park. He was involved in some of the original path laying and tree planting here, and he'll tell you some more about the making of Vicar Water later. And I didn't realise until he pointed it all out what I was looking at. All these ordered streets down there, a bit like a toy town, with the rows of houses, the parked cars, the playing fields, the buses driving past. And once you've spotted one solar panelled roof, then you realise how many there are. I didn't realise that this is where it had been, down there. Because my existence is connected to it, connected to the moment Lord Kitchener said, "We need to find a space where we can house thousands upon thousands of men and train them in trench warfare." When someone looked at a map and said, "We can clear the moorland and put the camp there." That's what turned the wilderness into order. Not coal, but war. Although coal would have done it eventually, as the boring for Clipston Colliery had already started. But war got there first, and the mine was put on hold. This was a place for soldiers that would become a place for miners. And sometimes, if I close my eyes when I'm up here, I can imagine them arriving. I can sense the war that they were practicing for. The Land of Chaos, they called it, when the camp down there was still being built. When the men of the University and Public Schools Brigade arrived here first in May 1915. Marching in from Edwinstow in the rain, ankle-deep in mud, not realising that this wasn't the half of what was waiting for them. But it took shape, like most things do. The moorland birthing a sea of wooden huts and parade grounds. If it had been chaos when the first men arrived, then by the end of the war this was a land of comparative luxury. Beds on both sides of the huts, with fires in the middle. Good stews to be had in the cookhouse. Flushed latrines, washhouses, bathhouses, YMCA huts, church huts, and even the Freemasons. And perhaps most impressive of all, a hospital with 365 beds. The camp becoming a prototype town with its post office, shops and banks. Like something from the Wild West. And all the while, troops coming and going continuously along Carter Lane, through Forest Town and Clipston, or marching into the forest to practice digging trenches, the air vibrating with the sound of the vicar's guns being fired. 6 men on each, night and day, over and over. The heather surrounding the camp, frequently catching fire, popping and crackling and throwing ash into the faces of those on the long route marches through the landscape. And always news in the local papers of what was happening. how this landscape was changing as over 30,000 men came and went.
The khaki stream continues to flow into Clipston, and if for many in England war is something that is taking place overseas, here in Sherwood Forest it is most definitely present, even if mercifully there is no enemy here to be found. But amongst the bayonet practice and inspection ground parades, Christmas must be celebrated, and the locals are busy in the preparation of mountains of sandwiches. Just look at these long lines of white-covered tables, the lovely centerpieces of sprigs and evergreens, and the food and cigarettes for all. And tonight, a concert party arrives from Mansfield to be joined by ventriloquists and club swingers from the soldiers themselves. Have fun, lads, and a Merry Christmas to you all.
My grandmother was one of those who helped that day. She hadn't heeded the warning given to the young women of the area of the dangers of the camp. That with so many young men landing in their midst, the ladies should keep their distance. And she caught the eye of one of those young men, a lad from Yorkshire, who she met whenever she could over the next few weeks. And always during the trips to Vicar Pond, where the soldiers were allowed to swim. And when Clive, for that was my grandad's name, won the sack race, at the Forest Town Colliery Institute grounds military sports day, Rose, for that was my grandmother's name, let it be known to her parents that she and Clive were sweet on each other. There's a photo my mother showed me, the only one she has of her father, who died at Passchendaele. He's standing in front of a neat-looking wooden hut in a neat-looking garden that would have been somewhere down there. And in the picture, you can see the names of the Belgian towns of Ypres and Mons, where the men were being sent to, carefully shaped in pebbles. Rose was a young woman, and having a child out of wedlock was difficult, which was why she moved from here soon after. When you look down there now, there's nothing really that would let you know that this was one of the biggest military training and then demob camps in the country. And just like the coal that's still lying under the ground, so there must be all manner of treasures waiting to be dug up in gardens when roses are planted or conservatories built. Maybe even something of my grandfather's. A winner's medal from a sack race. A charm given him by his sweetheart that fell from his pocket as he left for the last time. Let's move on. Don't walk towards the headstocks, but turn to face the path we just came along. You'll see another path to the left of it, which will bring us out near the bench we were sat on earlier. When you've found the bench, then go to the next track.